The big change was that we went from being a solid sport platform with a YouTube feeling. Basically, every channel looked the same. It was a solid sport channel. Everyone can create one and then get going. But what we did was that we identified, of course, that there was a big demand out there for having a white label solution, especially for federations, leagues, bigger clubs. Today, we have now over 40 white label partners, mostly federations, leagues. But the new thing is basically instead of having a solid sport channel, it's their platform, their design, their brand, and we just are the technical provider behind.
This is the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast, showcasing outstanding startups and initiatives in the global sports tech ecosystem. From Sports Tech X, the leading source for data and insights about sports tech. Here is your host, Rohan Malhotra.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast. It's always fun for me when we have returning guests. It's kind of a moment in time. You can do a comparison, see how things have progressed over the last year or two since we've last spoken. And I'm going to get the chance to do that today with Andreas Westerlind, who is the CCO at Solid Sport. Welcome to the show, Andreas.
Thank you. Great to be back. I'm looking forward to speak here again.
Yeah, I think it was a little over a year and a half now since we last spoke. So, Andreas, first, for our anybody who hasn't caught the previous episode, please, of course, go check that out. Or maybe don't, because Andreas will have new, better updates to share today, I'm sure. But for those who haven't caught the first episode, maybe we'll start with the basic introduction. To tell our audience who exactly you are and what exactly Solid Sport does.
Yeah, I mean, starting with myself personally, as you said, I'm the CCO of Solid Sport and also a country manager here in Sweden. But been working here now, this is my fifth year at Solid Sport. From the beginning, I'm actually a journalist, worked a lot with communication back in the days, and also former ice hockey player, as I mentioned last time. But then I started here working, first of all, with marketing. But today I work as the chief commercial officer, so work with everything regarding the commercial side. To give you a short introduction to Solid Sport, we've been on the market now for around 10 years and are today a leading sports streaming platform that enables basically every sports organization out there to enable their sport live and also have a good opportunity of creating new revenue streams back to them. That's in short terms what we do. And today we have around 100,000 games and events live broadcasted on our platform every year. And that's a growing number, of course, and what we will talk a bit more about today.
Absolutely. That's what I want to get into. Glad you clarified. So, I'm sorry, I should have specified at the start, chief commercial officer, because this can be chief revenue officer or just revenue head in different organizations, but CCO is what you call it. And you're where, let's say, the most of the action is. And especially in this market where there's a lot of action in the broadcasting and sports rights space. So, yeah, I'm dying to get into that conversation. Before we get there, though, maybe you can set some context for us. So since we last spoke, like I said, about a year and a half ago to now, what have been the key developments at Solid Sport? What has been the biggest change for you guys?
I would say that we made a big change in our product offering. I would say that when we talked last time, we just had launched that. But mm-hmm. now we've been working with it for 1.5 years. And the big change was that we went from being a solid sport platform with a YouTube feeling. Basically, every channel looked the same. It was a solid sport channel. Everyone can create one and then get going. But what we did was that we identified, of course, that there was a big demand out there for having a white label solution, especially for federations, leagues, bigger clubs, that sort of thing. And that was what we just had launched last time we spoke, and that's also where we see the most growth right now when it comes to our opportunities. And today we have now over 40 white label partners, mostly federations, leagues, is those type of partners. And what the new thing is basically instead of having a solid sport channel, it's their platform, their design, their brand. And we just are the technical provider behind. That's, of course, a really good opportunity for us to offer, instead of only offering the Soldier Sport standard platform that still exists and used by many of our customers. But that was the biggest step we took, and we will, which we also continue investing a lot in. And we believe that's the future ahead as well.
And I think that's a big part of, as you said, the future, because I think sports rights holders are understanding the power of their own brand, and they want to own the customer in some way, have their own DTC, direct-to-consumer, direct-to-customer sort of streaming service. Just to set the context properly, so you mentioned 40 leagues, federations. So what sports are you covering mainly, and in what geographies?
We started in the Nordics, of course, since we're a Swedish-based company. But today we also have an office in Helsinki. But we also opened an office in Germany in 2021. So we have an office in Hamburg as well. And so, of course, that's our focused market, Finland, Sweden, and Germany. But we're also growing in other markets since our platform is global. You can stream from everywhere, and you can watch from everywhere, and you can broadcast from everywhere. So even though that's our main focus, right now we see, for example, a lot of opportunities down in Spain, but also in other countries. And when it comes to sports, team sports has always been a main focus. With the handball, it might be our biggest sport, and we have the most partnerships, most federations, but we also see several new partnerships in basketball, volleyball, football, of course. But the latest partnership, for example, is in Ultimate. Maybe not everyone knows what Ultimate is, but
I would say Frisbee.
Yeah, exactly. Ultimate Frisbee. So we now have the European Ultimate Federation as one of our partner, who now just launched their white label solution with us, where we would stream around 20 international Ultimate events with them every season from now on. So there's no like limit in what sports we work with, but of course it's more team sports. But we also see, for example, a heavy growth in figure skating the last year with international figure skating events around Europe, and with also federation partnerships in Austria, Finland, Sweden, and so on. So as I said, no limit in sports, but used to be a lot of team sport focused.
Understood. So team sport focused primarily in Europe, but also growing. Speaking of growing, you mentioned earlier that you're helping a lot of your customers generate revenue as well. So maybe walk me through some key milestones that y'all have gone through over the last, like I said, year and a half.
Yeah, I mean, we reached a big milestone just the beginning of this year, where we now have reached a level of, we've generated 10 million euro back to our partners. So basically all those teams, clubs, events, federations, that's the revenue we now generated back to them for streaming their games with us. And I would say that that's also our biggest USP on the market, that we are, I can probably say that we are the best when it comes to that with our partners, of helping them generate new important revenue for the sports and increase their commercial values. That's what we do, except just offering leading technology. That's what we want to be best at to every partner we work with.
Nothing like leading with a nice, strong revenue number, no? When the numbers speak for themselves, you don't have to say much, much more. Just to understand that number a bit more, maybe you can shed some light on it. So this 10 million plus, 10 million euros plus that you've helped your partners generate, where is that revenue coming from? Is it primarily through, let's say, advertising, commercial revenue, sponsorship revenue? Is it through paid streaming or paid subscribers? Is there something else?
90% of our partners do pay-per-view streaming with subscription. So, of course, a large portion of those revenues comes from there. But then, of course, numbers we don't always see is that, of course, our partners are also selling advertisement in their streams. They're selling sponsorship packages. So that's more of a hidden number, I would say. But, of course, that's also an important revenue stream for them around these streams. But that number is majority is pay-per-view and subscriptions. And something we've been working with since the beginning. Pay-per-view and subscriptions.
That's interesting, because what you're saying is that in some ways it's the 10 million that you know, because maybe there is a additional sponsorship or advertisement value that you are not computing into that figure, which the partner is leveraging in other ways, which is not coming directly down to you, but you are obviously having an influence on them being able to generate that revenue. So maybe 10 million is the baseline. It could be higher.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it probably is. I mean, I think when we started and Solid Sport was born, we had this vision of that we saw a big problem on the market, and that was that it was very expensive to broadcast sport, and it was around 5 to 10% on the global stage that was broadcasted when we talk sports in general. And that was the biggest games, the biggest rides, you know, and we wanted to be the solution for the other 90%. So then we created a platform that was free for everyone to use, but also in an incentive of actually generating revenue. So even if you're a low level football team or a big club playing big games, both of them can make revenue from streaming with us. It's all about just how much and how many viewers you'll have. But I would say that that's been our USP since that there's no risk of streaming with us. You will mm-hmm. make revenue from the first game. And then you can have different models, different rev shares, different features included. But it's a place for everyone, all organizations out there.
And again, all organizations, all federations at various levels of sports. So one is at the elite level, or these are top federations, but even as you go down the value chain or go down the pyramid, I should say, to grassroots level, I think everybody appreciates the value of broadcasting, of putting their sport in front on a screen somewhere. And if you can do it well, with some good graphics, with a good interface, with all that basic stuff covered, then there is a revenue opportunity here. Andres, so you've gone through quite a journey, right? Last time we spoke, as you said, you were just launching the product, and now it's very clear that there is a strong product market fit. You have a good rollout strategy. What have been some of the biggest learnings for you on this journey, and how? Also, so two parts. So one is the learnings, but also this market is shifting quite dramatically and dynamically, right? I mean, the way sports rights holders value themselves and the way they talk to traditional broadcasters is very different now from where it was 2 or 3 years ago. So, yeah. A, maybe I would love to hear your thoughts on how you think this market is going and the shift. And in that, while you're selling into this market, what have been your biggest learnings?
Yeah, I mean, what has happened is basically, first of all, it felt like the timing of that launch was perfectly for us.
Yeah,
and to give you one example, we work with one of the, or actually the biggest football club in Sweden for several years, Malmö FF, who plays in the top division here. And of course, those games in the top division are broadcasted on national television. But what they wanted to do was building this club TV solution that we see more and more out there now in different OTT solutions, and they did it with us. But what they also did that I would say was a bit of a pioneering thing for them was that they stopped selling their media rights when it comes to qualification games in the Champions League, Europa League, and decided to we can do it better ourselves than just selling these games. So they started to do that on their own club TV with us. So, and we directly, so of course, whoa, this is really big, and Malmö FF then became a case for us to other clubs out there in Europe. So when this new product was launched, we directly started to contact the other clubs in Europe who were also playing in these qualification rounds. And last summer we broadcasted 50 of those games with various of clubs around Europe. And I would also say that that's also defining what's happening on the market right now. It's not only about these big clubs; it's also about these leagues from second division or third division, or actually in some cases first divisions as well, that has been through many years now got really good paid from the traditional media houses. But now we see more and more traditional media houses who have less money to spend on media rights, which means that in the end it will be more and more rights out there who now needs to look for other solutions than just sell the rights, similar to what MFF did with their own rights. And that's what we see more and more now, that rights we haven't really spoken to before now reach out to us and looking for doing this themselves instead, even if it's a league or a single club, which of course puts us in a really good spot.
Yeah, and I think that's the shift in understanding of a club for themselves or a sports team for themselves. Like, they're becoming more and more a media company. When you're broadcasting yourself, I mean, working with a partner, but you're broadcasting yourself, you understand that that is my core asset. It's not just my stadium, which is, okay, filling that up and selling a bunch of commercial revenue. This broadcasting right is really powerful. And rather than bundling it with under a layer of 100,000 things, where the broadcaster might or might not plug it, and you know whatever, actually taking control of that, your own story is clearly what the market is going towards increasingly.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, like Malmö realized that they can get, most of the clubs can get a good payment for one game. But what they realized is that if we're not selling that game, doing it themselves, we can get a lot of our fans buying a monthly subscription, which with over time will give us a much better outcome than just selling it once to a television station. And I'm not saying that in some cases there is a good opportunity of selling it. Sometimes we recommend our clubs to doing so when they get a really good offer. But I say that we also there have a role of actually not only giving them another option. In many cases, when clubs come to us, they also get better bid because they have another option. So it becomes a better situation for them when they negotiate those type of things. So in all, taking advantage of your own media rights is what we see more and more by having their own solution with us. It's a really, really big trend. And we, as you said, this will be the future for most of the leagues out there and other type of rights.
Yeah, we've seen the elite teams, elite leagues, I should say, already experiment. I mean, let's look across the pond, right? The NBA has had its own league pass for best part of almost two decades now. They've been doing this for a while. And we've seen La Liga experiment in certain Asian markets. We're having this conversation increasingly so in US and European sports. Can you walk me through that Malmö use case a bit? So just through the numbers, how much would they be charging for their pass? So I guess it's a monthly pass. How much is the end consumer user paying, or €5, €10, yeah, €20 a month? And I don't know if you can share or would like to share, but at least some approximate numbers on what that is able to generate for them versus what they might get paid for that one-off game, which you know, a traditional media house might buy.
Yeah, I mean, without talking too much about exact financial numbers, what they did is they are combining free content and paid content when it comes to these exclusive behind-the-scenes materials around their club, which, of course, is very, very relevant and something the fans like a lot. But in order to get all the content, and especially the games that they have exclusive rights to broadcast, you pay a monthly subscription of €10. But you can basically cancel it whenever you want. But what we see is that when Malmö is doing this compared to maybe a TV station or a media house, is the stickiness of the fans is, of course, very, very good, because they realize that we're not only just paying for service, we're actually paying to support our favorite club. Which is, of course, very powerful for they shouldn't not just leverage too much on that. But of course, they have a really good and strong opportunity of creating a great service for their fans and also getting important revenue back. All in all, it's a win-win situation, right? And I mean, we're talking thousands of fans paying every month to get this content. And there are so many clubs out there who can do it. And it's not only that you need to be that big. I mean, we're also working with clubs that are on a much lower level. But instead, what they are doing is that they are broadcasting all the games in that club. If they have 30, 40, 50 youth teams, they can create a streaming solution for the whole club. And every team in that club has their own channel and a club subscription. So basically, every parent to those 40 teams can pay a monthly fee for that club to watch all the games in the club. That's also a powerful solution, because who doesn't want to watch their kid or grandkid basically when they can? So it's not only about these like bigger clubs, it's about all the types of clubs out there has an opportunity of creating this service.
And then you can add potentially other layers of services on top, right? You could add maybe some sort of AI-based tracking and analytics solution, which gives them data and insights. I guess you would maybe be using AI to do some automatic highlight clipping, which can go as a package to a scout. How do you work in these kind of topics? Do you work with a lot of partners for different areas, or do you try to build a lot of these, let's say, potential microtransactions on top in-house?
I mean, both. We do a lot ourselves when it comes to highlights, for example. We have inbuilt solutions for that. When it comes to analytics, We work more with other partners. We're, for example, integrated with a company called Sideline, who is a complete analytics tool that some of our leagues uses. And then basically when a broadcast has ended, directly sync that replay into that system so the coaches can go in and analyze those games. And that's something we work with other providers out there as well, because it's a really important thing for many of our clubs to be able to analyze the games. So that's one thing. And I mean, education we see is a really big thing for our partners, of course. We used this season, for example, we launched a referee service in the Swedish handball. So basically now every referee in Swedish handball have access to all the games they are refereeing at in Swedish handball. So that's an additional service for the Swedish handball, where we have 30,000 games streamed every year in Sweden. Now the referees can go in and directly after the game go in and see how they have performed and do education around that. And you can do that, of course, for player coaches as well, similar services. Because education is, it's not only about revenues, of course. All these opportunities are as important for many of the partners.
And this is the part, this is the stuff that I believe is the true power of doing, let's say, broadcasting through streaming, because it's so much easier to build all these kind of micro layers and microservices and, you know, buy a little package, a referee package or an analytics package or maybe a betting package or whatever else, and you can add it. It's easier to customize for the end user versus the traditional media house, which, yeah, will struggle to roll out that service. And it's also a struggle to educate the end consumer to how do they have to interact. So much easier just because it's all online.
Yeah, and the value of the community is also hard to like put a number on. But let's take the Swedish Apple case again. I mean, when we started on a white paper, it was a lot of the things that was streamed, but on so much different platforms. Some streamed on YouTube, some on Twitch. And that was, of course, a tough spot for the Federation to understand, okay, what's happening, what stream, how can we somehow gather this in a good way? And that's where our partnership started. And as I said today, 30,000 games from the youngest up to the second division is streamed on their platform that we provide, which gives them not only that the whole sport is gathered under their umbrella, the teams are streaming themselves and making revenue from it, but they now also have a community of around 400,000 handball viewers, which they can communicate to. And of course, the sponsorship package they now can provide to their sponsors of that type of platform is huge. Similar to all other federations we work with, that you can really create something that everyone wins from. The clubs wins from that they can enable the games and have their own channel in that environment, create revenue there. But all in all, the federation also gets a really good service for themselves and for their whole sport.
Powerful stuff. Andreas, what is your perspective on big tech entering sports broadcasting and sports streaming? By this, I'm talking about Amazon, which has been buying up rights from the NFL to the NBA to the Premier League in different parts of the world. We've seen Apple invest quite heavily in American sports primarily, but also looking to take MLS to the world. We've seen Meta pick up rights in different parts of the world. YouTube, of course, with the NBA. So this is coming out of America, but also coming through into Europe and other parts. How does that impact a smaller player like you? And more importantly, how do you think it impacts the traditional media houses? Because I think that's, a real point of potential fight and disruption.
Yeah, for sure. And we will see more and more in this. As you already said, it puts even more pressure on the traditional media rights owners, media houses, that they are now coming in and also see the potential in it. For us, we are not so much in the same area in the sports market. We work basically in some scenarios, we work in the premium segment, as I said, with the Champions League and Europa League qualifications. But we are more the solution, as I said from the beginning, for those 90% that usually is not up for grabs for the bigger fishes. So far, we don't see them as a direct competitor. YouTube has always been educating the market for us in some way. Many of our partners comes from that they have streamed on YouTube or Twitch or that type of service. So I would say in that case, they have actually helped us educate the market. But who knows what will happen in the future if they also will start looking down in the area we are. But right now, we don't really see that what they're doing now will impact us in such a big extent. But it will definitely continue changing the landscape as we talked about when it comes to media rights.
Potential acquisition case for you guys, maybe somewhere down the line.
Who knows?
Who knows? Absolutely. But from your perspective, and maybe I have my own opinion on this as well, why do you think this is happening? Why is big tech taking such a big step into live sports? And also, by the way, not just live sports, Netflix is investing in sports content, the behind-the-scenes stuff that you were talking about, and also now starting to do a bit more live. Why do you think this big shift has happened over the last two, three years?
Because I also think they have seen that consumers in general, are the most willingness you have to pay for today is sports. It's such a high engagement around those, the sports in general and games. And that's the reason why many media houses has bought rights as well. And then I'm talking like publications, media houses who do newspapers, for example. They are trying to make money on news with subscriptions, and they have seen that if they buy live stream sports, it's easier for them to sell subscriptions because that's basically the easiest thing to sell. It's just such a high demand from those who are following it. And I think now Netflix and these big companies see the same thing, that of course movies and series is very popular, but I think sports is really something unique when it comes to the interest of paying for it.
I think you hit the, at least from my perspective, hit the nail on the head. It's almost the difference is the schedule. Like I can buy a pass to watch my favorite show or my favorite movie that's coming on whatever, Amazon Prime or Netflix or whatever, but I potentially could discontinue my service after I've watched it and I'm done. But with sports, it's every Saturday. I have to watch it.
Yeah, exactly. You don't need to create a script or a story, or it will always be there, and then you will always know that it's always ongoing. So it's a very nice thing to work with in that regard. And we see there is interest on basically every level, and there is an audience for every single sports opportunity out there. We work with 500 youth tournaments today. The numbers we see are astonishing around these tournaments.
Crazy.
That we can stream a football tournament for kids, streaming 5,000 games during a week. And of course, it's a great service for, especially around international tournaments where the parents can't go and watch, but they can watch from home. So it's a great service for them, but for the organizer, it's a revenue they have never even thought about. And actually makes such a big impact for them that, whoa, we could just enable this service. Of course, it's a lot of work behind producing 5,000 games, but it's such a win-win scenario.
And that production is now easier as well. That's the other thing. It's a lot easier today. It's all happening in some beautiful offices in Stockholm and Helsinki and Hamburg.
What's happening in AI is also, of course, helping us a lot. And that's also why we now can work more closely with AI companies out there, that we somehow complement each other in such a good way. And it makes it easier for us to help our partners produce more in a easier way without having filmers on every field, etc. At the same time, it of course creates good opportunities for them.
Maybe talk about that for a second. Like you mentioned partnerships. So can you expand on that? What kind of partners do you normally work with? Are there any particular types of partners that you are currently looking for?
Yeah, when I started 5 years back, I would say that it was a very competitive landscape. The AI providers out there saw us as a competitor and we saw them as a competitor. But that has changed a lot today. I would say we work with most of the AI providers out there, and maybe more closely with some of them. But we work with Speedio today, another Swedish company. We work with MoveNC down in France, who also have an interesting AI solution, mobile AI solution that is a great on lower levels and helping us a lot around tournaments today. And we're also starting to also work more and more with Beo and other type of those companies. So I would say that, as I said, we complement each other in a very good way and can together create a really good offering to all those partners out there that becomes a really fully automated solution, especially now when we have more and more integrations with the sport. So we can basically automate the tournament with about 5,000 games with no really manual effort behind it. And that's a really interesting development, and it has gone so fast.
And this I actually find interesting, and this is just a personal curiosity, because as a market watch, which is what we are, like our job is to see who's doing what in the market, most of the companies, if not all, like some are more analytics leaning. They're not so interested in broadcasting. But Spideo, Veo, these are companies that say, hey, yeah, we will help you broadcast and we will take your match online to streaming. How is it that you've broken this thing of we're no longer competitors? So what are you collaborating on? Where is your value and where is their value?
As we know, what have happened the last couple of years is also, if you look on the investment side, in not only sports tech, but tech in general, is that all tech companies, us and everyone out there, needed to start thinking about, okay, we cannot do everything. We need to find profitability. We need to be more focused on what's our core thing. And that happened to us as well. I mean, of course, during the years we have talked about, should we develop hardware? Should we develop a camera? And we have seen the other AI providers have also tried to do their own OTT, their own streaming. And now I think, without knowing exactly how they think, is that we need to focus on what we're best at. And we know what we're best at, building OTT streaming solutions, cost-efficient streaming solutions. And they are really good at doing great hardware with AI. And those two together become a really powerful offering. And that's what I believe has happened now, that more and more everyone is working on what they do best.
I think last year when we published the VC report in November, and also when we're going to do our look back at the year in April, we'll publish our next one. We call 2023 the year of consolidation for sports tech. It was mainly because there was an investment winter, right? There was not a lot of money going around. And it took a lot of effort, a lot of willpower, a lot of determination for startups to survive. And one of the key points that how they would do that is to be lean, to be efficient, and to focus on what they're good at, and then find where they can cooperate with somebody else to rely on what they're good at. We saw not as much funding activity, but we saw so much M&A activity last year. This is a trend that is continuing, where two companies are working together. Now, what you're describing is not M&A. It is just a collaboration. But it comes from the same theme, same idea, that we've worked together, we built something together. I do what I do best, you do what you do best, and the end product can be more than the sum of its parts, which is a very, very powerful idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, great to hear, Andreas, and great to hear that there's so much cool stuff happening at Solid Sport. Maybe you want to tell us about what is coming up over the next few months? What can we look forward to?
What's closest now is we're going now into an Easter period. As for many companies, we also have a calendar that changes a lot. But now we're going into an Easter mode, and we expect. I mean, last year we had 15,000 games streamed during Easter from tournaments only. So we're now preparing for that period this year again, and we believe it will be much more this year, at least 20,000 games from tournaments. So that's what's closest now. That's all our markets now preparing for all these tournaments happening around Easter. And directly after that, at the same time, there is a lot of playoffs, of course, for the indoor season that we need to take care of as well. But as soon as that, we move over to outdoor season. So, for example, the ultimate season starts in April. That's an important thing for us, along with other stuff. And then it will be the European Games again, as I mentioned this year, during July, August, where we'll have a lot of interesting things and a lot of work, of course, as well with all these clubs. Our expectation is that we might even double what we did last year.
Incredible. That's the beauty of our sports. There's always sports somewhere in the world, and there's always sports to watch and do. What about you from a maybe product service perspective? Is there a roadmap, any new stuff that will come out from the company?
It's a lot of focus, I would say, on, of course, continue developing this offer we just launched, but also moving more and more to becoming not only a streaming platform, to be a complete sports platform. And related to that, it's a lot about integrations. We have a lot of integrations with our customers, but now for a league, for example, we don't only want to be a streaming platform. We want to be the sport platform, the sport hub of a league, meaning you should be able to find news articles around the league. You want to be able to find the league tables, who's the leading goal scorer, those type of things is what we are now developing at this moment to be able to really be a complete sport platform. So that's one important thing on the roadmap, I would say, right now to take that step as well.
Interesting stuff. Last one, Andres. If there's a call to action to our listeners, anything that you're looking for, are you in a funding round? Are you looking for clients or partners? What should somebody reach out to you about?
I mean, of course, this company is always interested to find potential investors or that, of course, even though we, right now, the last couple of years, it's been a lot of focus on becoming profitable. So we are there. We have done a great journey when it comes to that. But as for every tech company out there, we always are interested to start discussions when it comes to new investors. Other than that, I would recommend everyone out there thinking about taking the step of streaming and want to invest more in that, please reach out to us and we will find a proper and good solution for you.
Excellent stuff. And what is the best way to reach you, via email or via LinkedIn?
No, you can go into, you can reach me on LinkedIn for sure. And if you just want to do sign up on our page, if you want to just reach out to us, but me, you best find on LinkedIn if you just want to ask some questions about how we work, etc.
Super. And we'll drop Andreas's profile page in the show notes, as well as the link that you can sign up and inquire directly with Solisport. Andreas, that it's been a little over half an hour. That has flown by. Super interesting conversation. Thanks so much for taking the time. Anything else that you want to share about what's coming up or just generally talking about Solisport?
I think we covered the most of it. I'm also trying to think here at the same time, but as for every tech company, you always have a lot of things going on technically, but I think we covered the most important parts right now. But thank you very much for letting me participate again. It was a pleasure.
No worries. It was my pleasure as well, Andreas. I think we did cover a lot. We tried to talk about the evolution in all in about less than 40 minutes, talk about the evolution of this fast-changing broadcasting landscape, the view of the leagues, the rights holders themselves, and how they're getting more aggressive and more interested in establishing direct connection with their customers who are stickier and are there to pay. The media houses and their role, who are on some shaky ground, they need to evolve and innovate. Big tech coming in, whether it's Amazon or Apple or Netflix or all of these tech guys, and the reason that they're investing in sport. And in the middle of all that is Solisport, who is growing and shining and continuing to do super interesting things. So thank you for all of that, Andreas. Before I let you go, I have to ask you my favorite question, which I always end with, which is what has been your favorite sporting moment?
My favorite, I think I said a thing last time about my favorite club in Swedish Ice Hockey League, Modo Hockey. They went to the first division when we talked last time, and now they just secured a contract in the first division. So that's my favorite sporting moment right now.
Fantastic. So always good to see. Yeah. Your own club doing well. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
A good way to finish the episode. Andreas, thank you so much for taking the time once again. All right, guys, that's a wrap for another episode, a really interesting one. And we're going to talk about this more later in the year. Innovation in broadcasting tech. It is a really, let's say, fast-changing space where there's a lot of unsettlement discord in different parts of the world. And it's a space that we'll be watching more closely, speaking to experts like Andreas who have innovative solutions to present. All right, guys, till next week. See you then. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast with Rohan Malhotra. If you like our show, let us know and leave a review. And if you want to know more about us, check out sportstechx.com, where you can find our latest industry reports and updates. For a deeper dive into all things sports tech, check out our comprehensive database, SportsTechDB, at sportstechdb.com. Don't forget to follow us on social media. You can find us at SportsTechX on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. Join us next time for another insightful conversation with a leader in sports tech.